So Reshame's better than Timber? Is that what we're saying?
Oh, wow. That's a great opening.
I mean, that's what everyone online seems to say. When one person played CDM and the other one played right back, but anyway.
I think Rhys James is everything that we argued for a little bit Trent Alexander-Arnold could be, because there's that couple years there of hype saying like, oh, he could be a midfielder. He'd be so good if we just stick him in the midfield. No, that's actually Rhys James this entire time.
How good was he? Oh, my God.
He was so good. He was fantastic. When has Rhys James not been this player? He's been fantastic for his entire career. He's just never healthy. That's always the discourse with him, is he's never healthy.
Yeah, that's the biggest
problem. So if he can stay healthy for this Chelsea
run. He has been for 11 months now, and that corresponds with them getting better in the league, winning the Club World Cup, and now sort of challenging for the Premier League title, question mark, maybe? I don't know. Probably not. We will talk briefly about your performance against Bayern Munich and obviously talk more about the performance against Chelsea because that's more recent. But I do have to tell you straight off the bat, like, I have to shake both your hands. You're the best team in the world. Congratulations.
Wow.
You're the best team in the world.
For what?
I was not expecting that.
In world football right now, in terms of like power rankings, known. Like Arsenal are the best team in the world.
But we got to
And I don't think that's not a controversial.
Because of the Bayern game, right? Not post. Because post-Chelsea, like, I wouldn't be shaking the hand.
Well, yeah, pre-Caicedo red card, you weren't looking like the best team in the
right,
world.
Right, even post-Caicedo red card, let's be honest.
But if they're not the best team in the world,
what
who is?
What other team in Europe the past two game weeks was perfect? No one was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no one was.
Literally.
So, of course, we'll just take the Bayern game.
Yeah. Yeah, if they're not the best team in the world, then who is?
Bayern? Who they beat?
I mean, they barely just beat São Paulo. So,
God,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So who would you say other than Arsenal? I think there's a pretty big gap there.
I think it's either Bayern, or if you don't want to get ahead of yourselves, then you're talking PSG if you want to talk a little bit more long term. But I mean, you said it yourself, you almost went down to third in Liga this season.
Oh, it was close. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to plenty of stuff. Welcome back, everybody, to the 6 Yard Box podcast, where today myself, Miles, Blake, and European champion Antoine is talking about the latest in the Premier League. We are talking about the disaster class right now that currently is Real Madrid. We're talking about Barca being first in La Liga now all by themselves. And we are back here again for a general roundup of European footy. And maybe like a minute talking about the Copa Libertadores. But anyway, a minute.
Oh, we are not
minute,
here for
a
that.
A single minute.
I don't know. Okay, sure.
All I have in the rundown is shout out Danilo for winning the game for Flamengo. That's it.
All right. Nice. You did it. Great. Now we can move past that.
Okay, cool. Let's start on Chelsea versus Arsenal, of course. It was a very interesting game. I want to get you guys' thoughts first on like how you enjoyed it. Like,
Miles is anti-football.
I'm not anti-football.
He's pro-football.
What do you mean?
You're pro-football. You didn't like it because
of I didn't like it because of the amount. Like, I get it. It's part of the game. But, I mean, you could look at any other game in the Premier League this weekend and see a clear difference in the stopping and the starting. Like, that's kind of it. It's no specific player to blame. It's just, it's a rivalry. Both teams were up for it.
Yeah.
And it's a physical game, right? And when it turns physical, especially in the first few minutes when you saw, you just knew that with every tackle, someone's going to fall or something's going to happen. And Anthony Taylor, I think he did what do you think, Blake? I think Anthony Taylor, did a decent job.
He was super card happy for me. I don't think he was terrible, but
actually,
I don't know.
There were some decisions. I
get it.
He
was trying to control
the
game and set a precedent, but he was really card happy for me. I think probably most of them were yellow card challenges in different circumstances, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. It was definitely a chippy game.
Yeah.
So who's going to be the happier of the two teams?
Bro, Arsenal should be happy. Are you kidding me?
Really?
Like fully.
Yeah.
I think Chelsea
Let's look at
be
it. Let's look at context throughout this entire game. Away at Chelsea, which we haven't won in 2 years. Last 2 years we've drawn away at Chelsea. Okay. We keep our momentum going there. Haven't lost at Stamford Bridge in a while either, so that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Any team with their two central defenders out, who are also their two best defenders out, is going to struggle, not only in defense, but building up from the back, especially how Gabriel and Saliba play. They are so good with the ball at their feet. They bring assurance to everyone else, including the midfield, who was outran, outworked, and outclassed by the Chelsea midfield in this game because they didn't have their central defensive pairing, either one of them, to rely on. Mascara beside Gabriel has looked great. Mascara beside Saliba has looked great. Hincapié beside Saliba has looked great as well. When you take the two parents out of the relationship and you bring in the two kids to do their job without any guidance from their mom or dad with them, which is what Saliba and Gabrielle are.
We're going to end up eating mac and cheese every meal, yeah, and it's not going to work
out. It's
a
fantastic analogy. You're letting two kids who have no experience in Premier League life go at one of the biggest games of the season without one of their supporting forces with them. Of course it's going to be a struggle for
them. Fair.
Of course, any team, PSG, United, any team, Chelsea without their whatever defense they're playing, like Chelsea without Fofana, who's been great this season when he's back from injury. Like, without those two central pieces, you're going to have a struggle breaking out of the zone, breaking out of your own zone, getting into attack. And not only on the defensive side, but I think that is such a huge reason as to why Arsenal struggled to play out from the back in this game, because they didn't have either one of their two defensive forces that are so good under pressure.
But let's not act like Hincapié and Mosquera aren't good at playing out from the back in the first
place. But they weren't today. Did you watch the game?
Mosquera, but I'm saying as players, though. As players, you're acting like they don't have any quality playing out from the back. Mosquera played in La Liga, which is a very tactically heavy league where teams like that play out from the back, and players need to be adept with their feet, especially center backs. And then Hincapié comes from Xabi Alonso's team, who were toying with everybody in Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. So these guys, they know how to play out from the back.
I mean, they
shouldn't
didn't
be
look
an
like
excuse,
it.
I think.
No, but it... Okay. I can't do this with you, Antoine. You're so hard on Arsenal On top of that,
I certainly agree that those discrepancies are really showing themselves in the first half hour. But we mustn't forget, you guys were a man up for like 60-plus minutes
of
that game.
That's a fair argument.
You had, obviously, most chances after that. You had a lot of chances towards the end of the game that you could have finished off. If Timber just left that header for Gyökeres, that would have gone over the net and missed anyways.
Good. Well, I would have came in here fuming.
I think you guys will be the ones thinking like, oh, we could have got more from that game. But like you said, you haven't won a Stamford Bridge in a minute, so completely understand. Yeah. Like, you probably would have taken a 1-1 draw before this game.
Exactly.
Your gap to Chelsea doesn't change.
I just looked at the context.
But the in-game context, you didn't really look at. Because when you're up a man for an entire, 60 minutes?
Yeah.
Around 60 minutes, right?
Yeah.
There should be no excuse, almost.
Absolutely. We shouldn't have conceded that goal. I don't care if it was from a corner. We should not have conceded that goal. And we let Chelsea dictate play,
which is crazy.
But why I'm telling you why is it stems from the defense. If one of those two defenders were in there, I'm telling you, the entire game has changed. The entire outlook of how the game is played. Because instead of being able to just play out from the back, we have to kick it long. Raya isn't trusting his defenders. The midfield doesn't feel like they can push forward enough. Rice was dropping deep every single time to help baby the other two center backs and help them break out from the back. That's not how we usually play. Rice can drop down, but then that means the other player drops down and then they two center backs can push out wide. That wasn't happening in this game. Rice had to be so central, and instead of the two center backs creating more space, they were right beside him, which didn't make breaking out any easier. That's why I think we struggled so much. We missed our two parents, bro. They've like carried this team defensively and breaking out from the back so hard.
That's fair.
For the last 3 years, it's only the second time in the last 120 games that Saliba and Gabrielle, one of them hasn't played for the Arsenal in the Premier League.
Fair enough.
And you're right. You're right.
Like,
red card.
Let's be hard on Arsenal.
And I am. And
because
I have.
If Chelsea away isn't a fixture on your schedule that you circle and that you think to yourself, we need to win if we want to have aspirations to win the league. Like, this is a fixture that you guys, you said, for the last 2 years haven't won. This is a fixture that you guys should be prioritizing as a must-win fixture.
Everyone is always saying the league isn't won in these games. It's won against the small teams when you drop points. So that makes no sense. You want to not lose against your direct rivals. That's really your only goal. If you directly don't lose and you don't gain or lose any points on them,
if you go into Chelsea away taking a let's not lose mentality, that is not a champion's mentality.
It's not my mentality. I'm saying at the end of the day, I'll take that considering what we had to do with our lineup. Like, again, injuries should not be an excuse, especially now that we've had the signings and the backing in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
However, a 1-1 draw isn't the worst result in the world, considering that 2 hours before the game, Mosquera had to get ready because Saliba was out. It wasn't like Saliba was prepared to be out for the whole week. It was a game time decision that he couldn't make the squad.
Does it worry you how bad Saka was?
Saka wasn't bad. His final product was bad. He actually had a lot of good chances, and I actually thought he did well enough to get in those positions, but his final product was awful in this game. And that's what worried me.
Yeah.
He was the one that got the assist, right?
Yeah,
from Rio?
Yeah,
so fair enough.
So that's why, like, that's what I said. He actually got into a lot of good positions. He had a lot of good chances.
Yeah.
But his final product looked really poor.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's anything like
some
Saka
of,
we've seen
yeah,
before.
Some of the poorest I've seen from him.
100%. Yeah.
But again, like, let's give a lot of credit to Chelsea.
I think we need to.
They played fantastic.
That should be the main kind of area of this game that we're talking about. Obviously, plenty of credit goes to Reece James. Mm-hmm. Like we said,
plenty of credit goes to Maresca, I think.
Ooh.
I mean, guys, the fact that it almost didn't feel like Chelsea were 10 men during that hour where they were 10 men, I think that it's just it's credit to Maresca and how he had his boys playing. They were playing with so much heart out there.
Yeah. They look good.
The way that Maresca manages his games nowadays, like, he is one of the best in-game managers in world football. The way that he can adapt to situations that happen in the game is something that is very rare in today's managerial world, in my opinion. You look at a lot of managers around the world and the biggest teams. Maresca almost doesn't stand out, but he's one of the main candidates in terms of managing the game when something goes wrong or after conceding a goal. Like, he is very proactive in his management, and that's something I love, and that's something that I think he has grown in his game ever since he's come to Chelsea.
Fair.
And it can grow even more, and it can lead to Chelsea to crazy heights, in my opinion.
You think Maresca hasn't gotten the credit he deserves?
I think the Club World Cup win has given him a lot of credit, a lot of deserved credit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But overall, in the Premier League, I don't think he's gotten the credit he deserves.
Fair. So you think it's Maresca almost more than the £1 billion Chelsea has spent over the past couple of years?
I feel like the Chelsea project has...
That's a good point.
I don't know. I feel like the Chelsea project, once Maresca came in, has looked a little bit different. Yes, they're spending big money.
It was starting to stabilize a little even before Maresca came in, I would argue.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't want to compare it to Arsenal's project because you guys didn't nearly spend as much money as Chelsea did. Mm-hmm. But you're hiring a young manager who's a Pep disciple, and your squad is a relatively young squad. There's similarities to Arsenal's project. And that's why I think Chelsea, in the long run, in 2, 3, 4 years, can actually truly challenge for the Premier League. Right now, I don't know if it's truly possible that they can challenge for the Premier League. I still think they need to grow into something a little bit stronger, a little bit more consistent.
Yeah.
But I see similarities in Arsenal's project from a few years ago.
I do as well, to be fair. You know, it's with like 4 times the money spent, but, you know, fair enough.
Fair enough.
I think we've hit some kind of like return to the mean where it's almost like if you spend X amount, you're almost guaranteed to show success. If you buy X amount of young, promising wingers, you know, at least 2 or 3 of them are going to be worth something.
It's young guys in their squad that will be playing with each other for how many years? In a few years, they'll know each other like the back of their hands.
They're going to be fine. Yeah. And I do agree with you, definitely, that Maresca does deserve credit here. I remember it was around this time last year where Chelsea was like 3rd place unexpectedly behind City and Liverpool. And Maresca was asked like if Chelsea should be considered title candidates. And he was like, no. Put an end to the conversation. We're not in the position right now to be even thinking about that. Now, at this point this season, he is kind of entertaining it more, but still saying, like, you know what, these guys are still young. We need to see if we're in the same position in, you know, March. So we'll see. He's starting to, like, up the expectations a little bit more. We're starting to move on to the next phase of the Chelsea project. I, for one, am excited to see it, but definitely don't think they're ready to challenge Arsenal for the title yet. I don't think there's any team still that's worthy or willing or able to challenge Arsenal for the title. I still sit at a cool 90%. You guys are going to win it.
I mean, 90 is crazy. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I really hope you're right. But
90 is quite high.
Like, this is what I said. It looks like a huge margin.
Yeah.
Until Arsenal drop points and a team that's on our asses capitalizes on that opportunity.
Sure.
And then it's 3.
Absolutely.
It's still 2 game weeks now. It still will take at least 2 game weeks for Arsenal to completely lose the title race if they were to do that right now. Like, lose their position at the top. We're in a good spot.
Who's the most threatening team to you right now, do you think? Like, who do you think it's City?
It's City. It's still City.
Okay. Yeah, trauma there.
But even City, like, before we can get onto them in a second, but even City, unconvincing at the weekend. Unconvincing. Yeah.
They were.
Again.
They really were.
Right? So
it's just lapse of mentality.
Yeah.
It's just that sometimes they switch off.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
That's not something you see in Arsenal.
That's exactly right. Right? And I still think that, again, I hate doing the injury thing. I've done it so many times. But you've said it before, actually. Maybe it is the way Arteta trains his players.
It could be.
I'm starting to think that could be a reason why.
How so?
If their intensity in their training is so high, he demands so much of his players, especially when they play on the pitch too. Like, it's a fairly high pressing team. They like to, you know, run, do their thing. I get it. If they're training that high, trying to replicate that on the training ground, maybe their hamstrings are going, maybe their knees are degrading. Like, maybe it's too much for them at times. I don't know. Like, there has to be something, because the amount of injuries that Arsenal have had over the last 5 seasons, it's Odegaard has probably missed about a year.
It's ridiculous.
Year's time. Gabriel Martinelli's missed a year's time. Gabriel's missed a year's time. Saliba has missed a year's time.
Yeah.
Saka has missed 6 months. Like, it's crazy.
It's insane. If you add up all the injury time, it's flagrant. It's crazy.
So, I don't know. I mean, our run of fixtures heading into the new year is fantastic.
Yeah.
This is our hardest. That was our hardest match for a while.
Villa look a little tough.
Villa's always tough, especially
away.
Is it away?
Yeah,
it is away, which is, again, a kind of a bogey team for us. But we're still 17 unbeaten. Like, things are looking good. Our next matches:
Brentford, Villa, Bruges in the Champions League, then Wolves, Everton, Crystal Palace, Brighton to end the year.
Like, what an easy run, bro.
It's good. Like, you want to get how many games is that? 7 in the Prem?
There's one cup game in there, Crystal Palace.
Right, okay. So however many games that is, if it's 7, you want to get...
5.
21 points.
You want to aim for 21? It's 5?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to get 15, and you will probably settle for 13.
Yeah.
But if you want to win the title, am I right, Miles? You want 15.
Yeah. This is the thing. Like,
you should be going perfect.
You guys have gone Old Trafford, St. James's Park, Anfield, City at home, out of the way. Like, you guys have... Stamford Bridge as well, of course. You guys, like, if you look at the fixture table of who has the next, like, easiest fixtures over, like, the next 8 weeks, like, you guys are near the top of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think City are also near the top of that, to be fair. They have a very easy run going now. I believe United are kind of at the top of that list as well.
Fair.
And then I think Liverpool have an easy run. I don't even know. It's like a lot of like good teams have a lot of easy.
You mean
fixtures.
Like a lot of good teams are not playing each other? Is what you're trying basically.
Yeah,
saying.
We've had single week now has been like, oh, Arsenal are playing a big game, City are playing a big game. Like Liverpool have a tough fixture.
Like, it has been like that. You're right.
It has. Like now we go into kind of like more fixture congestion, but then also like a bit of an easier run on paper. It won't be easy in practice though because of kind of the fixture congestion and tiredness and. And all of that, you never know. Absolutely. You never know.
Yeah. You want to go to City?
I was going to say next we go to Real Madrid.
Right, sorry, yes, you're right. You're right.
Okay, you may remember if you were watching, like last week, Antoine and I had a little bit of a discussion about Xabi Alonso, about Real Madrid, about who is to blame. Kind of advocated to not hit the panic button. But yeah, smack it now.
Think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think Real Madrid are close to crisis now.
I think they're in crisis.
You think they're fully in crisis?
I think Real Madrid, I mean, you don't win one game, questions are asked. You don't win two games, you're on the verge of crisis. If you don't win 3 in a row, then yeah, you're in it. Sprinkle in a little loss at Anfield as well. Sprinkle in losing the lead in La Liga as well.
In less than a month?
Yes. They were, 5 points ahead of Barcelona?
They were
like 1 month
clear,
ago?
Like, I think a month ago, then they played Vallecano, who they drew against, they played Elche, who they drew against, and now they played Girona.
All away, and their next game is away to Bilbao as well. So, not looking good for them. No,
It all started off with losing against Liverpool.
Yeah.
That's how it started. That was the first of the streak. Mm-hmm. Damn. Yeah. Damn.
It's a bad way to start.
So, they went away to Girona. It was an Unahi banger to make it 1-0. Mbappe ties it up. Does anybody want to guess how he tied it up?
Why do we know Unahi?
World Cup, younger, wonder kid.
Okay, I was like, why do we know that name?
Powerhouse Moroccan.
I was going to say.
Okay. Does anyone want to take a gander at how
we
Mbappe
all know
scored?
How he scored?
Yeah, okay, he scored from the spot. Shocker. I mean,
was it a valid penalty?
It was a valid penalty.
Oh. Keeper guessed the right way, too. It was just
and
well.
I mean, Real Madrid did have chances in this game. Like, they had a couple goals called off.
Yeah, the XG was like 2.5 to 0.8.
Yeah,
but
I mean, they're always going to aura farm their chances, so it's that's never been an issue. But yeah, I think you guys can attest to what.
Yeah, especially at the end of the game, they had. I think Vinny had a chance that, like, if this was like 2 years ago, you'd expect him to bury like 9 out of 10 times. He missed it high and wide. He had one right at the end as well that he just curled wide as well, kind of took the chance away from Rodrigo.
Yeah, and Rodrigo definitely ain't scoring, so yeah, you can chalk that.
That's for damn sure. But they spammed 26 crosses in this game, which I guess if you employ Trent Alexander-Arnold, I can't knock too much. But if you employ Kylian Mbappe as your striker, I kind of see that as like a what are you doing type of tactic. They then brought on Gonzalo Garcia. He started warming up at like the 55th minute. I kind of go like, okay, they might kind of, you know, ease him in here. Maybe this will complement the kind of system that they're going for right now against this low block. But then they bring on Garcia in the 89th minute and bring off Trent at the same time.
It's insane. I mean, from top to bottom, this Real Madrid team, I think, is fully disjointed. There's zero cohesiveness in what they do.
So percentage of blame between Xabi Alonso and the players, like, how do you distribute that?
I think it's more on the players. There's just such a culture issue in Real Madrid. It's a glaring problem.
And I think
problem.
That's on the players. I think so too. As a United fan myself, I see culture problems. Player power problems from miles away. 100%. And I see such shades of that with this Real Madrid team right now. I think you can fire Xabi Alonso. You'll bring in a manager that the players respect even less. And you can bring in somebody that tells them to work hard, that tries to employ great tactics. Mm. And if these players don't want it with the right urgency, intensity, energy, desire, no tactic is going to work with this Real Madrid team.
Yeah,
no matter who you have.
You're 100% true. The midfield specifically for me is what's... There's zero creativity. There is zero creativity in what anything Real Madrid do. It seems to me as though the Real Madrid players don't know who they're playing with.
Yeah.
They don't know each other.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, from top to bottom, I'm seeing a disjointed press, an unsynchronized press. When Mbappe goes up and presses, nobody's following him. And then when it doesn't work, he gives up. When Vinny does the same thing happens. There's zero cohesion between the midfielders, especially against a low block. I mean, Girona played a low block in this game. We've seen Liverpool kind of employ a lower block against Real Madrid. They were unable to score. They cannot string more than 3 passes together when trying to score against a low block, and that is a serious problem.
It is.
I think Barcelona are absolute fools for playing that high line against them, and that's ultimately why they lost to them. Because anybody with half a brain cell sees Real Madrid struggling against all these low blocks and think to themselves, yeah, let's play low block, because they don't know how to operate under a low block. It's crazy. Ever since Bellingham has been back from injury, Arda Güler has looked like a shadow of what he looked like when Bellingham was injured. Because Bellingham has to now be the one playing under the striker, and then Güler is now a little bit more deeper, a little bit more out wide. It's harder for him to operate. I'm telling you right now what's going to happen in the next few months or in the next few weeks. Bellingham is going to take over the starting position. Güler is going to be on the bench. Because Xabi Alonso is now in save my job mode. He knows that in order to save his job, he needs to be playing his quote-unquote best players, his biggest personalities, and they'll lose, and they'll be happy because the personalities in the squad will be happy. The big egos in the squad will be happy because they're playing. That's simply how it's going to go.
Real Madrid looked so much better when Bellingham wasn't healthy. They looked so much better when Vinicius was on the bench. That's not me saying that Vinicius and Bellingham are problems themselves, because they've been really good individually for the past couple of weeks. But it's an issue of too many cooks. It's an issue of playing players and egos, managing those egos, over managing tactics. It's over just putting all your best players on the field because you're almost contractually obligated to, over employing the right system and just fielding the best team for that system. Mm-hmm.
If Xabi Alonso wants to impose his system on this Real Madrid team, he needs to fully be committed to it. He needs to fully stick to it. When I see him absolutely just drop everything once Elche scored on them last week.
Yep.
And go back to his best players playing, you guys ball, screw the three back. That shouldn't be happening. Yeah. If you want to impose your style,
you might have well have kept, you know, Carlo Ancelotti.
That's exactly right. Man. And I'm seeing the choices he made against Girona. They follow that same line, that I want to save my job line, and I'm scared to make true brave decisions. The fact that you let a man like Unahi, who balled out, by the way, but the fact that you're letting Unahi show his technical class against you and set the pace of the game, it's disgraceful. When you have the likes of Tchouaméni, when you have the likes of Bellingham, when you have the likes of Valverde on a team sheet.
Yeah. But didn't you were on Xabi Alonso's ass last week about even trying a three back.
My problem is he's not sticking to his guns. He's not sticking to what he wants to do at Madrid.
It's very
he came
place,
into Real yeah. Madrid, and in his press conference, he delivered. He said so many things. He delivered so many promises, and everybody was, oh my God, this new Real Madrid team, this culture change, it's gonna be insane. Xabi Alonso is this tactical mastermind that will change the culture at the club and bring us the results that we desperately needed this past year. He hasn't delivered on any of those promises so far. Yeah. He's tried to. He tried to start something at the Club World Cup. He tried to start something at the beginning of the season, and it was partially working. But as soon as it went even a little bit south, he seems like he's completely bailed on what he's wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean,
is he even in the right position to succeed? Is he even able to? Is any manager able to come into Real Madrid right now with this current roster as it stands and make a system work? Is any manager in the world capable of that right now?
It's hard to.
It's not even about a respect the manager thing, because obviously, Xabi Alonso is a Real Madrid legend, has more of a legacy than any Real Madrid player on that team right now, probably. And before that, you had Carlo Ancelotti. And if they're not going to respect them and those coaches' desires, who the hell can come into this team right now and actually impose a system and actually have the support of the fans, of the dressing room, of the board, everything, where they're able to bench the big names if they want to. I think it is imperative that Xabi Alonso just makes the decisions that are best for the system and the team, and everybody is okay with that. But nobody's going to be okay with that. That's the thing. If Jude Bellingham gets benched, you have a whole barrack of Jude Bellingham fans that are watching Real Madrid for Jude Bellingham that are going to be mad at Xabi Alonso for that. You have the board who's paying Jude Bellingham like £300,000 to £400,000 a week to sit on the bench. They don't want that, you know? And then the same, and then Jude Bellingham himself, through his agents, through his sponsorship, through his kind of people on his team, they're going to become unsatisfied, and they're going to affect the dressing room, and they're going to affect the culture around Real Madrid. And you can take that logic and apply it to like five or six other Real Madrid players. So you can't start them all. One is not going to play. One is going to cause problems. Mm. And that's why I think like they'd actually be better off if they sold a Rodrigo and sold either like a Goulart or a Bellingham.
Yeah.
Not because they would be better on paper, but because they have way too many cooks right now.
They're so out of sync. It's crazy. It's insane. The fact that Courtois has been your best player these last three games, just speaks to how shit you've been. And you look at a team like Barcelona, who have their problems, who are defensively very poor right now. At least there's some sort of coherence. Actually, not even some sort. There is coherence in what they
do
on the pitch. There's an identity. Yeah. You know what they're trying to play. And the players know where they are going to be on the pitch. They know how to play with each other. Yeah. This Real Madrid team, they don't know how to play with each other. There are zero reference points in that team.
Yeah. But there's also like such a lack of urgency. Like in this game, I feel like at any point they could have turned the light switch on and they could have started dominating Girona. And I just got the sense that they just assumed, well, Real Madrid were going to score at some point. We're going to win this game. And I didn't see them turn the light switch on until like the 70th minute. And that's when they got the majority of their chances. And it's just so frustrating that these guys think with their egos that they can just delay, and it's going to go right, not just because of, you know, a genuine sense of belief in ourselves, but like almost utter delusion at some points. Like, I just, it's so frustrating to watch. So frustrating to watch.
Right now, watching Real Madrid games, as you said, it's like anyone telling you that they're entertained while watching Real Madrid are straight up lying to your face. If you don't want to rip your eyeballs out while watching this Real Madrid team right now, you're not watching them properly.
Yeah.
You're doing something wrong.
Yeah, again. We talked about the questionable decisions from Xabi Alonso. Not bringing on Gonzalo Garcia until the 89th minute when you're spamming 26 crosses in this game. When you are bringing Gonzalo Garcia on, you're bringing off Trent Alexander-Arnold. Like, those are things that blow my mind. Yeah. And, yeah, I don't want Real Madrid to be like this because I know from their perspective, like, I know Xabi Alonso can work. I know he's their best hope in terms of a manager that can make things work. But, man,
he's not making it easy for himself.
And I don't think, from what I see from Real Madrid fans, I don't think they have the patience for it. And that is frustrating me.
Yeah. I mean, Real Madrid will always be in a win now mode.
Of course.
They will always be in a win now mode. And I don't think they'll be able to accept that their club needs to maybe go on a little transitional period where they need to start just learning the basics. The players need to start learning the foundations to playing a proper style of football.
Of course.
And the Madrid fans will never understand that, which is why ultimately it will never work, in my opinion, with Xabi Alonso.
Anything else to say on Real Madrid? I guess we can transition to Barcelona. Maybe yeah. Now it makes
sense. Shout
out
Girona. I thought didn't play like a 19th place La Liga team.
Hey, I will say both Barca and Real Madrid have their problems. If I'm like a Villarreal
or an Atletico Madrid,
yeah. I am licking my 100%, lips. 100%.
Yeah.
I am getting very excited.
On a European stage, I think Real Madrid and Barcelona, I put them below the top dogs right now.
I don't know. I think
Real Madrid more than Barcelona.
Yeah, I think Barcelona's attack, like, genuinely could still be the best in the world.
Yes.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's a defensive.
The thing, as a Barcelona fan, that would annoy me, which I'm not a Barcelona fan, but I'm wearing the kit today because it matched my hat. But the thing that would annoy me is that the defensive issues were not addressed this summer. Mm. That's what would frustrate me.
Yeah, of course.
Is that the attack is still great. Dani Olmo has been, like, kind of wishy-washy, I feel like.
Yeah, he hasn't been great.
He scored this weekend.
But he did score this weekend.
Scored twice. He could have scored like five times.
Yeah. And like, Lamine Yamal still cooking. Like, Lewandowski. Like,
Rafinha's back as well.
Exactly. But think about everyone we just talked about. We're not talking about when they get thrashed midweek by Chelsea. And because their high line is absolutely cooked. That's what we don't talk about because it's get overshadowed by their attack. But from an outside perspective, when I've watched them, it seems like the defensive issues that we saw last year against Inter, of all teams, have not been addressed. And that's worrying if they want to make a run.
It almost seems like it's worse now.
It does.
Worse now. Because they lost Inigo Martinez. Yeah. It is. No, it is. Absolutely it is.
And why wasn't that addressed? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Why wasn't that addressed?
They would argue like monetary issues. Their only real bit of business in the summer was bringing in Rooney Bargee for like what, like $5 million?
Yeah, nothing.
And then Rashford on loan.
Yeah.
That's it.
They didn't do anything else, did they?
I don't think they did anything else. There was
Garcia. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Johan Garcia.
And he's been solid, right?
Without Johan Garcia, I guess they're losing that game.
Yeah. It's not like insane money that they were
like
spending.
This 3-1 against Alaves, it's a very deceiving scoreline because without Johan Garcia in there, it's easily 3-3.
Yeah.
They concede in the first minute of the game, and then they ultimately make it back with their great attack, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But in between that time frame, there's Juan Garcia that makes an incredible save from point blank range. There's another chance from Alaves on the left hand side.
Yeah, that was crazy.
There's another chance from Alaves on the left hand side. This Barcelona team is very inconsistent in their defending, and it's a real problem. It's a real problem.
Did you guys see how stressed Hansi Flick looked after the game?
Oh my god!
No, like genuinely, like
what? Like, I was. What was that? Like
It wasn't even funny. Like I'm concerned. Yeah. I'm like,
genuinely, I thought someone passed away on the sidelines or something, and he was like it was Omo? No,
it was Rafinha that was consoling him on the bench.
I was
like,
what is going on?
And then it wasn't even that. It was like in the press conference afterwards, in his interviews, like the eye bags. I'm like, what happened to this lad? Like, Chelsea really did a number on this guy. Like, I fully understand that, like, Barcelona have their issues. Maybe he wanted to bring in a defender, to your point, Blake. That couldn't happen in the summer. But, like, oh my goodness. Like, he said after the game, We don't have the control or intensity of last season. We can't be satisfied because we won four games in a row in the league, and I completely understand that. I like that Hansi Flick is the perfectionist type of manager. I do appreciate that very much, but he is right in what he's saying. Yep. Barca are not as good 100%. Right now as they were 12 months ago, and that is concerning because their young players that were shining last year are a year older now. And you would think that because of how young that team was, they would only progress and progress, but it hasn't really looked that way. It seems in some games, like at some points in this Alaves performance, they looked found out. And like you said, Antoine, if Juan Garcia wasn't putting on a masterclass this game, it could have been a lot worse. Mm-hmm. So
what I would say is that although they're still young, we know from the teams that have failed, like the Inters, like across all of sports, where you're young and you have the opportunities until it's your final one. Mm-hmm. You never know how many chances you're going to get. Exactly. That Inter tie was theirs for the taking. It was theirs, and they sold.
It was their last opportunity until it's not anymore.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, they could go up against whoever in the round of 16, and it could not go their way.
Lamine Yamal could break his leg tomorrow, and the entire history of Barca for the next decade is changed.
God forbid, but exactly. Yes. Don't want that to happen, like, you know, but... Sorry, not addressing, again, they have their money things, and I've been critical of their money things. Like, I have been. But I get it. It happens. But if they don't go out in January, if they're financially able to shore up this defensive line, I don't know how they're going to win anything this season, despite Real Madrid losing, despite the Champions League.
No, I think they'll still win La Liga, in my opinion.
You think so?
Yeah. I think there's a distinct level gap between them and Real Madrid.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I see where you're coming from. It's a fair point you're making. Absolutely.
If you're Villarreal, if you're an Atletico Madrid, you're looking at Barca getting thumped in the Champions League. You're looking at Real Madrid struggling against Olympiacos at times. You're looking at Real Madrid drawing three games in a row in La Liga away from home, not looking like themselves over the past month. Mm-hmm. You're looking at an opportunity.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. I think there's a lot for the taking in La Liga. And I wouldn't put it past the Canadian boys on Villarreal to do it.
Right?
Okay, let's relax.
See, this is like, I've kind of tapped in this week. Albeit not that much, but I've kind of tapped
good,
in.
Good. That's what
and
we
like,
want.
And like, low-key?
That's what we want. That's what we want.
Entertaining, eh? It's good football.
A little Tejan Buchanan, La Liga champion. Like, how good does that sound?
Like, it's good football.
It is. You see the Oliver Shea goal last week?
Is it better football than Prem?
No.
Come on.
I wouldn't go that far. Last thing I want to ask you, boys. If Xabi Alonso or Hansi Flick gets fired, do you think Mikel Arteta could be a good replacement for them?
First of all, whoa. Let me take in that question, first of all. Hansi Flick's not getting fired.
Hey, I mean, he could quit at this rate. If you saw him on the bench, you would think his days could be numbered.
Getting fired. If Xabi Alonso gets fired, there's not a chance Mikel Arteta grabs that job.
Well, he wouldn't be the first former Barca player to take the Real Madrid job.
All I'm saying is the stars could align if Arsenal don't win a trophy this season. Arteta gets fired. He needs a job. He wants to prove Arsenal wrong for not giving him one more year. He goes to Real Madrid and wins a treble.
A treble in Madrid.
Oh, yeah.
Never been done before.
Bro, Arteta is... genuinely one of the better coaches in the world.
Well, yeah.
And I don't think that's universally understood. I really don't. Really.
Yeah.
I think from among rival fans, he gets a lot of slack for not winning.
You think people that see Arsenal first in the Premier League, 100%. First in the Champions League, don't think Arteta is the best coach?
100%, because they always go immediately to, you haven't won a major. That's always the argument.
Really.
I will tell you right now, this question popped into my mind a couple hours ago, and I went like kind of looked it up, see if there's any like spaces on like Twitter or Reddit that like any Real Madrid or Barcelona fans are talking about it, and all of them were like, absolutely not. I would never want Mikel Arteta. Good coach, a good potential, but if he left Arsenal, he could do like a good job at like a Valencia.
I told you. That's they don't understand. I don't understand why. The project he's built there has been crazy. It's because he hasn't won anything. That's the only reason why.
It's also the same conversation as Xabi Alonso. He wouldn't do a good job.
Do you think if you do win a Premier League or Champions League this season and Real Madrid or Barcelona fire those coaches and came calling for Mikel Arteta, what do you think are the chances that he takes it?
I think very low. Very low. If we win this season and they come calling, very low. Because I think he wants to build a dynasty here. You don't do all this work just to leave after you win one Prem or one Champions League. Because let's be honest, we're probably not winning a double this season. You want the full, right? You want both of them to get cemented in your legacy, fair. I think.
Okay. And on that note, do we want to go back to the Premier League?
Sure.
Let's go okay. back.
Let's speed it up a little bit here. But we had West Ham losing at home to Liverpool. Salah benched.
Beautiful
Liverpool
decision.
Liverpool look better.
Beautiful decision. This is what I like.
Certain agendas are doing pretty good right now.
So remember my take last year where I said Salah was going to fall off? I meant
it's
that
almost,
he was going to happen
this
year.
It's almost like, you know, he's 33.
No, but I meant it was going to happen this year. Remember at the beginning of last year, right. I was like, Salah was going to fall off.
And then the beginning of the year before that, too.
Remember 2023 when he said Salah was going to fall
off? The year before
off.
That as well. No,
like
what a good
we
decision.
We said that every time where whenever they did well in the league, aka like winning last year, we made that same thing. It's like, well, Liverpool have to get worse, right? I mean, Salah's getting older.
It was always a topic of conversation. When is Salah going to drip in four?
I think we also underestimate how much Salah carried Liverpool last year. God. And I think there's almost a direct correlation
100%.
Between his fall off and Liverpool's fall off in general. Because there were a lot of games last year where it was Salah, two goals and an assist. Liverpool win 3-1. Outside of that, wasn't the best performance.
I also think this equates to him and his ability to not affect the game when he's not scoring. That's why that's why he's dropped and they looked better. Because you cannot score in a game, especially as a winger, and still impact it in a positive way.
There's so many examples.
Salah cannot do that.
Yeah.
And that's always been his thing. You know, but he's so elite at creating chances for himself that it doesn't matter.
You know who looked better in this game?
Mr. Alexander Isak and Mr. Florian Wirtz.
Yeah. Florian looked good this game.
I think this is Florian's best game.
He should have scored, bro. He had one chance where he really should have scored.
Yeah.
Isak finally scored. Holy crap.
Great finish, too.
Is that's not his first Premier League.
First Premier League goal.
For Liverpool.
First Premier League goal, $150 million.
It's only up from here, Blake.
I don't know any farther down is. Jesus. Yeah,
Cody Gakpo looked spectacular in this one.
He did.
He's a candidate to bring into my FPL team, but I don't know if I'm being fooled.
No,
maybe getting fooled.
No, he's a trap. He's a trap.
Yeah, Gakpo and Sub are like the only two players who can hold their heads up high with this Liverpool performances this season so far.
Yeah, it is worth kind of putting in the caveat that West Ham are freaking horrendous. And Lucas Paqueta,
oh my god,
might as well have been wearing a Liverpool shirt in this game. Because there was some small village in Brazil right now that are that just had $1 billion injected into their economy, because I don't know what kind of bet somebody had put on.
Take me through the timeline.
Gets a yellow card after repeatedly dissenting the referee. Continues to dissent the referee. You could tell the referee doesn't want to book him again.
Does not want to book him.
Twice, Paqueta had fully gone into the referee's face, pointed at him, gotten pushed back from his teammates, and it looks like he's walking away. The situation is cooling down. And then he riles back up, runs back towards the referee to give him a few more words. And then after three cycles of that, the referee finally goes, okay, I have to give you a second yellow now.
Yeah.
You're off.
He is there's
if, and then he calms down if, and then he walks off.
If there's anybody telling me that he has not gambled on him getting a red card, I'm not gonna believe it.
And he's not even hiding it. Did you see him walking into the tunnel? He was clapping.
He turns to his fans and he's giving it a little like this, and then kind of clapping on the fans. And then the stuff he came out afterwards with
on Twitter.
Oh my god. It's either again. Want to look at this from a mental health kind of, human perspective, of course. He said himself that, yes, he's struggling mentally. Sometimes he feels unsupported by the federations that should have been supporting him through this whole ban process, whatever is happening.
Right.
I totally understand from his perspective how, he literally had a move to Man City fully lined up. It was going to happen, and then this stuff that he may or may not have done.
May or may not. I think it's may now.
I think it's may now. I personally think that is on you, brother.
Yeah, bro. He's making it worse for himself.
Yeah, it's either very, very, very fishy from Lucas Paqueta, or it's some unstable behavior that I think he needs to address himself. That's all.
I was when he came up to the referee, I was trying to read the lips. I seen a couple fuck offs in there.
Yeah, you can't say that to a ref, man.
And then the B word to a referee.
God, biatch.
Bro. Yeah, that one.
You biatch. I don't know. He can only dance in Aura Farm so much. He's kind of washed now, in my opinion.
he was doing okay.
Nah, he's washed. He was doing fine.
He has the talent.
His bank account surely isn't, but he is.
He has the talent to perform in the Premier League.
Oh, of course he does. He's
but
good.
So did Adele Taarabt, you know, like that's not every.
So did Sammy Amiobi, bro.
Okay, maybe he didn't, but
I miss Sammy Amiobi, bro. You know, you know.
You know who will one day? JJ Gabriel, who scored a hat-trick against Liverpool for the U18s.
Moving on. This guy and his JJ Gabriel.
Bro, please move on, bro.
Agenda.
Please move
Man on. Man United beat Liverpool 7-0.
That would make sense. That's something you point out.
In the Prem 2?
Yeah, that's great. Yep. I'm so proud of you.
In the U18 league. Okay. That's great. Anyways, moving on though. Liverpool are looking okay, but is that going to be a long-term trend?
Hopefully not.
Very much we have to see. Speaking of long-term trends, there's a long-term trend in this podcast, especially over the past 12 months that we've been harping on. And this is why you listen to the Six Hour Box podcast, ladies and gentlemen. There's a certain somebody, a Portuguese somebody, who our Frenchman here on
the panel.
Makes
my head spin. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us about...
This is the story of Mateus Nunes.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Okay.
How he gets the nod week in, week out to start at right back for Manchester City.
Mateus Nunes.
The Manchester City. The big Manchester City we all know and love.
Well.
Isn't that right, Blake?
That's a lot of words that I don't agree with. But
no, the very successful city that we're used to.
Sure.
The fact that Pep Guardiola looks at this player and ticks his name on the team sheet every week.
Yep. Had a summer where he could have bought a right back, but said, no, I'm good.
Everyone was saying, I have one issue.
He's holding Pep's nudes.
Yeah, he might, bro. He is.
No, I'm good. I'm good for a right back. I'm Mateo Nunes.
Oh my
Please,
God.
Bro.
Oh, my God.
Rico Lewis, you're fine. Stay on the bench. Yeah,
he'll show
Nunes.
You.
Hey, LeBron. We're good.
We good. God.
He'll show you once in a blue moon a decent enough moment in the game where he can do something. But oh my God. On the first goal.
Oh.
Pass right to one of the Leeds
wow.
players.
Yeah.
Comes back to try to defend it. Gets shoved off by Calvert-Lewin like he weighs 90 pounds.
Shout out DCL, bro.
Dude, as someone who had Nico O'Reilly in his FPL team begging for the clean sheet, which looked bang on,
yeah.
guaranteed,
yeah.
book it,
yeah.
seal it, done.
And
then Mateo Nunes pops up.
And the fact that it's on Calvert-Lewin too. Like Calvert-Lewin
has had
a despicable season
so
far.
But that's like good for him, bro.
Good for him.
Bro.
We remember DCL back
he
in the
said, day. And I quote, Champions League clubs were after me.
Yeah. And
we remember everything.
Oh, yeah.
Lewin.
That 2018, 2019, 2020 DCL.
The Carlo Ancelotti DCL. We remember it.
Everton are so good at just finding pockets of players. James. Oh.
Alan.
Alan. Oh. Lukaku. Freaking DCL.
Yeah.
Seamus Coleman. Nah, Seamus Coleman's a goat.
Leighton Baines.
Leighton Baines. Oh, my God, Tarkovsky. Bro.
Fellaini.
No, Fellaini had pockets at United.
No, but he was discovered at Everton.
Anyways.
Anyway.
All right, I'll fuck off then.
Big Mac, sure.
Oh, but Mateus Nunes guy's like, oh.
Yeah, he's garbage.
Do you think he starts for Everton?
So bad.
Who do they have there?
James Coleman.
James Coleman?
But as a midfielder.
Did he come off
injured?
He got hurt this week.
Yeah, they did not come off injured.
As a midfielder, maybe.
His 40-year-old ass played 5
O'Brien.
Minutes.
In. O'Brien? Yeah.
O'Brien.
I was watching a bit of O'Brien. At
Jake O'Brien is not a bad player.
We'll take him.
He had a better game than...
I mean, I'm not going to lie. You go down to Centennial Park. You grab the nearest right back from...
bro, don't dox me.
My bad.
That's crazy.
And you grab him and you put him on that City team. I don't think there's a distinct difference.
I will say, the thing about City, despite that they gave up a lead and we know about their defense. And also, what happened to Kucherov?
That's a great point.
It's a great question.
He's just there now. Anyway, what is positive for them is the fact that what I've harped them on, relying on Haaland or else they don't win games, they didn't have a Haaland goal contribution and they won a game. Mm-hmm. So good for you. That's good. That matters.
They beat the allegations.
City.
That matters to me.
I was really watching City in the first half, and I think that was the best half of football I've seen them play all season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were dominating. Leeds didn't get a sniff. And I was like, again, clean sheet in the bag. Nico O'Reilly, clean sheet points. We can get an assist as well here. Like, I'm on for an absolute screamer here for my FPL team. But then complete capitulation in the second half. Daniel Farke made like a couple of changes that I can't really go into heavy detail about because I'm not that wary.
You're not
about
a Leeds connoisseur, huh?
Yeah, I'm not really a Leeds connoisseur here. But anyway,
they brought
on. The commentary kept saying like Daniel Farke is making adjustments.
Daniel
I'm like, oh, all right, I guess so.
Their squad is so awful.
Who leads?
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah,
I like their terrible team. I have a special place in
mind. No, I think Burnley have like a more exciting team.
No.
I think so.
Oh my god, no.
I feel like Wolves sometimes has a more exciting team.
Now we're just fucking
bro. What you know about John Arias?
Savinho.
What you know about Jorgen Strand Larsen? What you know about Bellegarde?
Strand Larsen, bro. Isn't he hurt?
No, I don't think so.
Strand Larsen with one league goal in 14 games?
Yeah, because he plays for Wolves.
Bro, what? He's not terrible. How old do you think Strand Larsen is?
26.
Yeah, he's 25. where is he supposed to go? Who's going to want this guy?
Yeah, no, that team is awful.
I don't know.
They're awful.
But when he scores 30 in the championship next season, don't be surprised.
Guys, I kind of hope West Ham go down. That'd be hilarious. That'd be hilarious.
It'd be championship team playing in the London Stadium.
Sad for who?
Anyways, moving on to the meat and potatoes of the podcast. I don't mean to cut you off, Blake.
Yeah, that's fine.
We have limited time here.
Yeah.
I was going to get to Phil Foden bailing Man City out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the main point.
This goes in line with what we were saying last week, and that if City want to win, they need to be relying. Phil Foden needs to be having a good game.
Phil Foden had a great game. And this is why you listen to the Six Yard Box podcast, guys.
Phil Foden had a great game. Man City won.
Fair. Bookmark.
I think the two are interchangeable. Either Erling Haaland or Phil Foden. One of the two have to have a good
game.
Obviously, I think Phil Foden is more of a game changer in the aspect that he's kind of in the midfield, all over the place, playing that more traditional cam.
When Phil Foden is on form, Phil Foden is the best midfielder in the Premier League.
Yeah. How long before he's compared to Saka again?
He's better than Saka.
We're not doing this.
He's had one good game. He's better.
Phil Foden better than Saka.
He's a better footballer than Saka.
Yep, of course he is.
We have this debate every year.
And Foden's been terrible for a year and a half, but he's been better than Saka throughout that whole time, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see come World Cup who's starting in England. 11.
If Phil Foden can hit form, carry on this form for the rest of the season, Man City could genuinely win the Premier League. But that is the only way that they do it. An on-form Phil Foden is such a weapon to the City team.
Mm-hmm.
And if Pep can find a way to use him, and if he can kind of like stay out of trouble and stay in the right mentality and keep the performances up, then they are actually in for a shot at winning the league. However, if they'd still have these capitulation issues, then you know I'm gonna prove myself wrong.
Yeah, there are very inconsistent teams. Like, their players, like a Jeremy Doku. Think if all of City's players were consistent throughout a season. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Jeremy Doku, a consistent Jeremy Doku is one of the scariest wingers in the world.
Yep.
A consistent Phil Foden is one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. A consistent Ryan Cherki, let me not even get started.
Oh my god, you're such a glazer of City, bro.
Let me not even
like,
get
this
started.
Is such a stupid debate. If every player played 100% the best of their ability every game, then of course they would win the league.
No, I'm saying
that. Oh my god, that's such a stupid argument.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
I'm saying that the sheer quality of
player. Yeah, but Blake, he's not wrong.
I'm saying that the sheer quality of player in Manchester City.
What are we talking about? If Liverpool played to their quality 100%.
Like, Manchester City's players. Players are very inconsistent. And it's been like this for over a year. If they manage to find that consistency, they are some of the best players in the world.
You can say that with Liverpool's team.
No, I can't.
If Isaac found his consistency, if Salah found his consistency, if Virts found his consistency, if Van Dijk found his consistency, they win the league. What is this argument? What is this argument?
Blake.
What is this argument?
Does City not have an above average team in terms of player quality?
Of course, yes.
So, and is City not inconsistent right now?
Yes, I just think
you'll see one good game of Doku every five games, and then it'll happen again.
From the way you glaze him, it seems like he's already pretty consistent to me.
Not at all.
You glaze Doku.
Like you're just mad that I'm glazing City for some reason.
You love to glaze City. They're your Premier League team.
They're not my Premier League team at all.
They are. It's okay.
What do you think, Julian?
I mean, they kind of translate. PSG City, there's a lot of similarities with the way they've done business. That's all I'm going to say.
Does he have a little bit of a bias for Man City and in turn Ryan Cherki, perhaps? But is he wrong, Blake? I don't think so.
I just think the consistency point is not
a little
really
bit
valid.
I mean, like, you can extend that to Real Madrid. You can extend that to Liverpool. You can extend that
That's
to
my
any
point.
Team. Oh, if all of these guys on paper play to their ability, man, this team could be pretty good. Like,
that's my point.
Like, yes.
But we know that this is something that City has done before and they can replicate.
The question becomes, will they? Yeah. Do you think they will? Not can they?
Do I think they will? I mean, you want me to predict the future as well? I mean, fuck, buddy.
Okay.
Isn't that why we have a podcast? You're meant to predict the future?
Is that the point of the podcast?
Well, I mean, you're the city connoisseur.
Yeah. you're supposed to tell the audience what exactly is going to happen over the next couple of weeks. Please.
Look in the camera right now.
Or else I don't know what.
Tell me by January 2026 where in the league they'll be on how many points.
Actually, that's a good point. Where in the league do you think they will be?
Second.
Okay.
I don't think they will find that consistency.
I don't think they're going to win the league.
You don't think they'll find that consistency and they will be second by just 2026?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they were second last week. I don't think it's that.
No, I'm not saying it wrong.
Guys, Fulham away. Low-key tough fixture for that. Low-key.
Yeah,
tough.
Craven Cottage is not easy. Not easy.
Fulham's 15th. Okay, they're going to win. Moving on.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about Fulham. You want to talk about difficult
and
fixture.
A win.
You want to talk about Fulham winning. Oh. We can talk about Spurs a little bit. Miles, you want to talk to me about how bad Spurs are?
Spurs are really, really bad.
What do we think of Spurs?
I think they're fucking shit.
Oh, what do you think of shit?
I still think it correlates to Spurs.
Oh, thank you. All right. Is it over for Thomas Frank, boys?
I think Thomas Frank needs to be the next manager in the Premier League that's sacked.
I agree. No, because you know what? The straw that broke the camel's back was he was criticizing the fans.
Yeah.
Straw that broke the camel's back? What is that philosophical shit? What the fuck? What does that mean?
You've never heard that saying in your 21 years?
Explain what it means.
I can't tell you what it means. I can't tell you what it means, but I can tell you it's a saying that exists and I've heard before.
I can tell you it means that when you put too much straw on a camel's back, their back is going to break. So when you pile on the pressure that Thomas Frank has been dealing with loss on loss on loss, eventually it's going to break. And then
no, you're a hater. No, I'm not on your side. You're a hater.
Yeah, he knows.
Hold on.
Go break it down.
An idiom describing a final minor event that triggers a disproportionately large reaction due to a stress of previous smaller problems. Blake, thank you.
Praise the Lord.
When I heard straw, I was just thinking of a plastic straw. How is that breaking?
It's the straw that the turtle choked on. Is that better for you?
Well, might be. Anyway, sorry, keep going.
The straw that broke this camel's back for me was Thomas Frank criticizing the fans for booing Vicario after Vicario's disaster class for Harry Wilson's goal.
He should be booed.
He was like, I don't like how the fans reacted to that. That is unacceptable. They can't be true Tottenham fans.
I don't hate that
you
at all.
You can't say that.
I don't hate that at
no,
all.
No, you can't say that.
Probably can't say that, but like, I think he fans, wants to back his players.
I get
fans
the idea.
Have every right to criticize their players, and they can show that in the form of booing if it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And what Vicario did this weekend against Fulham, they have every right to do that. That's how football works, though. It's a harsh game. The fans, they go to the game. It's the most expensive season ticket in the league. It's not – they're fucking shit. The
especially
fans
at
are,
home.
Especially at home. Fucking terrible. Fans are fed up. They have every right to do that.
That's fair.
Yeah, capitulate against PSG, obviously looked terrible against Arsenal recently, looked terrible against Chelsea before that. Like, these guys have nothing to write home about right now, to look forward to. There's not one ounce of positivity in Spurs over the past, like, month.
Well, expressions. His videos always are nice.
That's not positive from a Spurs standpoint.
I know.
And they play such negative football.
That's the one thing with Thomas Franks for me, is that he's not tactically flexible. Like, he's tried to play a little bit more attacking. It hasn't worked. He tried to play a little bit more neutral in the mid block. It hasn't worked. And he's tried to be a little more defensive, and it hasn't worked. Nothing's fucking worked.
We've said this before. That Thomas Frank is a great manager for a team that's kind of between that, like, 10th to 15th 100%. Place. Like, a 10th to 15th
this
place
This Tottenham
team.
Job is at too is big of a jump for him.
That's what
this is Tottenham job is too big of a jump for him.
Yes.
And he hasn't lived up to the expectation, if there were any. He just needs to go.
It's almost like Ange should have stayed.
There's a massive disconnection between the club and the fans. I feel like the fans don't even want to watch the team play right now. I have a little bit of stats here. They're 4 games without a win, 1 win in their last 6 Premier League games, in their last 21 home games. So that goes beyond Thomas Frank and into Ange Postecoglou. In the last 21 home Premier League games, they have 3 wins.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Jesus,
three
Christ.
Wins. So funny.
I told you guys this. That I told you guys this stat as well. I don't know how it's like. I think Tottenham have almost as many losses at their new stadium as Arsenal have losses at the Emirates. Emirates was built in 06.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, we got to fact
There's
check
no
that,
way.
We got to fact check. Right. Can we fact check
yes,
that?
Yes, I'm happy.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Go try and find that.
I was going to say, what is the possibility that Spurs hire Ange again?
Low. They can't
not
do that.
Saying right now, not saying tomorrow they sack Thomas, but I'm saying like in like a year and a half, they're feeling a little bit nostalgic.
As time passed with Ange Postecoglou, it got worse.
Yeah, agreed. But he did win the trophy in the second.
I also don't think they should have sacked him at this point. I think what they should have done is gave him the start of the season. If it still went terribly, then you had to give a new manager a shot. But you're coming off of your first major title in how long? And you're going to sack a manager and disrespect him like that after he gave you the promise that he made at the start of the season.
Yeah.
He said he wins stuff in the second season.
If we're honest though, Blake, I don't want to say they got lucky, but that was a very, very weak Europa League pool. And I think in today's game with a new format, Europa League in general is very, very easy to win for Premier League teams. And I think it's a trend that we'll be seeing in the near future.
Sure, but who cares?
But I don't think...
The Spurs fans don't care. That was the best day of their lives.
If you ask a Spurs fan whether or not Ange Postecoglou should have stayed just because he won the Europa League trophy, I think they'd be telling
but
you.
But not just because. Like, there were obviously good signs before, and I think a lot of their downfall last year was also because of injuries. If you look at their point total right now, it's less than their point total was at this point last season. Yeah. Before, and then, like, they hit December, injuries ravaged their team, and they fell off a cliff. Antoine, who knows if that still would have happened if Ange stayed?
But
because then players start coming back a little bit, it was the same thing as United. You're playing Thursday, Sunday. You have no hopes of getting Europe in the league. You're putting all your eggs in the Europa League basket, and you're pretty much fielding the youngsters every single weekend. So obviously Spurs are a better team than 17th place last season suggested. I think it was looking pretty positive for Ange there for
I
a little bit until
Julian.
This point last year.
I'd agree with Julian.
Miles?
Hi there. Miles reporting. I have some stats here for you.
Oh,
so this was written on November 3rd by The Sun, which is very reliable. So this was November 3rd. This is coming right after they lost to Chelsea at home 1-0. The weekend slip up against rivals Chelsea was Tottenham's 41st Premier League defeat at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Premier League defeat at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. They moved in April 3rd, 2019. So it's been one more.
They've been at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for 6 years now?
By comparison, Arsenal have only lost 7 more despite being residents.
Okay.
Now it's only 6 more because they lost against Fulham this past weekend at the Emirates for 13 extra years.
Way. I don't know if that's true.
Wow.
I mean, it's reliable from...
Yeah, you don't trust The Sun?
The Sun, it's a reliable British tabloid.
That's fair.
Wow.
So,
what?
Spurs will always be fucking joint.
Oh.
Sorry.
Accent here.
All right. Let's move a little bit.
Also, sorry. Just a little side note. Xavi Simmons, their most expensive signing.
Bro, I was told
doesn't even play.
I was told he's better than Eze. I was told he's better than Saka. I was told all these things. He's
barely
garbage.
Even plays.
He's garbage. I thought Virts was bad. My lord.
Did it all work out for Xavi Simmons?
Did it all work out? Did it all work out, guys? Fucking loser, dude.
Apparently, if you're a new signing with your first letters of your name, XA, then you're just having a terrible time right now. All right, terrible joke. Let's move on. Let's go to Xabi Alonso.
That was awful.
That was
really bad.
Yeah, I was trying to just wrap that section up.
That was really bad.
I mean, I feel like we should be hosting it from now on.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay, host
okay,
this,
moving on
host
to...
this goddamn section. Then let's talk about Monaco beating PSG 1-0. Oh, please, Antoine, take it away.
Oh, thank God.
Oh man, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. I like what you did there. That was good. Very frustrating. I mean, there's just a lack of intensity in the PSG players, I think.
Maybe. Fraud.
Fraud, yes. Also, I want to put a little bit of blame on Luis Enrique against Monaco specifically. I think if there was one thing that we could have explored in that game was depth. It was in Monaco's depth, and Bacola was never subbed on. The fastest player on the team was never subbed on. When things weren't going well, instead it was Njantu, instead it was Mbai. and we can do all the youngster talk and how it's good to develop youngsters and how Liga is such a weaker league compared to PSG's level that you can play these youngsters. But let's face the facts, when things aren't going well, fuck the youngsters, I want to say. Keep them on the fucking bench.
Yeah.
Play your best players.
Yeah.
And let's start winning games. This start of season in Liga from PSG has been nothing short, in my opinion, of disgusting.
Yeah.
It's been awful. The fact that we are second, we could have been third. Second in 14 games in for the first time since 2020, I think. Something like that. I'm sorry. There needs to be some sort of standards at some point.
I see.
That can't happen. Right? I'm happy that it's not Marseille that's first. I'm a little bit more relieved that it's Lens and not Marseille because Marseille are absolute frauds and like to choke leads in the 90th minute. But it's still a very big problem.
For Antoine's crash show, I really want Marseille to finish ahead of
me as well.
Me as well.
If that happens, I don't know if I'm showing up.
No. Like, I think for the crash out on the pod, I think we need it to happen, dude.
No, I can't.
We need it to
happen. You've seen Mason Greenwood's new badge.
Yeah. It's always been a thing.
What is it?
It's been a thing since last year, and now people are saying,
What is it?
Top scorer.
The top scorer in Liga now has a badge on their jersey from last year. The top scorer.
And I think that's
so NBA.
I think that's
NBA. And it's like current.
I think it's something from like the Tour de France when you're the fastest guy, you wear the yellow jersey.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Miles is cultured as fuck.
Wait, RC Lens, bro.
RC Lens, bro. That's what I was saying.
I just realized that's my team, bro. Are you kidding?
Why is that your team?
Because RC Lens, bro.
Favorite RC Lens player?
Who's your coach?
No.
I don't know.
All right. Anything else to say about Liga, Antoine?
Yeah, they have Tovin. Bro, he's balling, bro.
Yeah, he's gross. He's gross.
He's doing great. No, nothing else to say.
Okay.
They have Odson Edouard.
They do. Odson Edouard.
Edouard. Sporting legend. Okay. Let's move quickly to Palace 1, Man United 2. Forgot to talk about this here. But we'll go touch on it really quickly.
Did you watch the game?
I did watch the game. I fell asleep to the game. But
yeah, it was an early one.
I did put it on right at 7 in the goddamn morning. Why are we moving it back half an hour? Please, Premier League.
Yeah.
You're killing me here.
It's also very hard to watch because of the sun. It's very weird. But the sun in the stadium made it hard to track the ball when it was in the box.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was almost unwatchable, in my opinion. Like, that's really where I started drawing the
line. God forbid there's a shadow in Selhurst Park.
No, really. Like, close the fucking roof. I don't think they have a roof. But goddamn. That's what happens with midday kickoffs, huh?
Yeah. I think general consensus around Man United fans, I'm still seeing a lot of, happy with the result, but shite performance. We still need to get the manager out. And I'm like, okay, let's kind of calm it down.
Who's saying that?
Almost like everyone I'm seeing on TikTok and Twitter right now.
See, you don't question him when he brings up that.
I'm sorry. I was phased out.
Palace away is a fantastic win. We haven't won there in ages, I feel like. But this is so Man United to beat Anfield away or beat Liverpool away at Anfield. We haven't won there in 10 plus years. We never win to Crystal Palace away. We never beat Brighton anymore. Like, we're breaking all of those curses, and then we're losing to 10-man Everton at home. So I don't get the buy,
You're just shit-led.
Yeah. I think Blake just summed it up there. Performance was questionable, but better in the second half. I think the Europa Conference League is killing Palace. Thursday, Sunday, not really great. Oliver Glasner was saying after the game that they wish they strengthened more in the summer because they don't really have the depth to really compete want to in the Premier League right now. They had the same thing when they played Everton recently.
The Premier League.
Yeah, they're still nice. Absolutely. They've had good performances.
Absolutely.
Their first performance against Liverpool was such a fun game, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I will say what's happening to Kobbie Mainoo, though, is disgraceful.
Talk to me.
I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of it because it's not just the continuation of what's happening. It's what I'm hearing Amrim say in the press conference before the game and then what he's actually doing.
Oh, I didn't hear about a press conference.
Amrim was saying in a press conference before the game that Kobbie Mainoo was a starter to him. Mm. That's just a bold-faced lie. It's just a lie. He's not a starter to you. Yeah, why are you saying he's a starter? You're putting him on in garbage minutes, 4 games to go at Selhurst Park, and this man is coming on with the biggest frown on his face. You're killing this guy's career. Again, I harp on this point every couple of weeks, but 2 years ago, this guy was starting in the Euros final, man of the match against Netherlands in the semis. This guy was scoring in the FA Cup final to beat our City rivals, And now he can't get a sniff. And I fully understand he doesn't really fit this system. And I think the fact that Kobe Mainoo doesn't fit our system and he's kind of in no man's land in terms of his career, I think that's why a lot of United fans are Emery out. And they're not having really the patience here. It's not just the results on the field, but it's what he's doing to not just Kobe Mainoo, but just like our youngsters in general. He hasn't been the best in the past 6 months of like managing youngsters and youngsters' minutes and all of that. Like, I don't know. I think a lot of people are saying that Kobe Mainoo needs to go in January, but Kobe Mainoo is not going anywhere in January. We don't have the depth. He's not going to leave in January for the same reason he didn't leave in August, because we don't have the necessary depth to allow that sort of loan or transfer to happen. And Amrim's not going to want him to go. And he's going to tell Kobe to his face that he's a starter, even though he's not. That's a lie. So I don't really understand. I just wish, again, from the perspective of our midfield being a little bit hit and miss every single week, I wish Bruno was kind of at least experimented as a number 10. Kobe Mainoo slotted into the 8. And, you know, we kind of figured out that midfield problem.
It makes no sense how he's not given him a shot at one of the 10 positions this year. It makes
that
no
as well.
Sense to me.
That as well. It it's almost sense. Like he's more suited to be an 8. That is his best position. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have like the engine to be an 8 and a 2, kind of on an island there.
Yeah.
But somehow Casemiro does. That's kind of...
I know. So you would think more forward up the pitch is a little more suited to what he actually is.
He has been playing... I mean, to me, I would like to see him experimenting more in the 8, but Amorim has only, like, almost exclusively been using him as a 10 the past, like, 6 months.
Yeah.
Even as a striker, he's experimented with Kobe Mainoo there, but it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's awkward. It doesn't fit. Kobe doesn't like it, but I don't see kind of the path. So it's going to be really sad if or when this kid goes. But anyways.
I'm just happy you can't use the, oh my God, we don't care about the league. We're talking about Europa League. So now you actually care about the Prem and you like, if you lose, it hurts.
To be fair, I am worried about United over the next couple of weeks because specifically with Casemiro, playing twice a week now in the Christmas period is not going to help him. And I think a fresh Casemiro not playing twice a week is a big reason why our midfield and in turn our entire team has sort of looked pretty good playing with decent energy these past, like, you know, month or two.
All right.
Am I wrong in that?
Because I mean,
you
like,
flicked your microphone away like I was saying blasphemy,
because,
but
like,
I
lad,
don't see anything wrong
lad,
with that.
You've had a half a season of just one game a week, bro. Like,
yeah,
just
exactly.
Cry more, like, at this point. Like, I genuinely have no... I have no ears to hear you cry about having to play two times a week for your 35-year-old. Like...
I'm just outlining the issues that are going to come from
that's a pretty fucking bad issue.
This is a podcast where we talk about these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, and I'm giving you my opinion that that's a stupid issue to be worried about.
All right, we'll move on then. Bayern Munich won 3-1 against São Paulo. We won't talk about it much. Bayern went 1-0 down early. Luis Diaz had a great assist to make it 1-1, and then he scored to win the game with a header in the 94th minute. Nicholas Jackson then added a third.
I think it's the most underrated signing of the summer.
Yeah.
Maybe not underrated because a lot of people know that he's balling out.
We called him overpaid.
Everyone called him overpaid.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, definitely. In terms of like the big money signings, like he has kind of gone under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
A
been good.
Bit.
Yeah.
Shout out Louis.
Shout out Louis, man. And then, yeah, just like a little roundup as well. Milan won 1-0 again. They still remain top of Serie A. Blake tells me, ladies and gentlemen, that he watched this highlight pack.
I did.
What'd you think? Cool.
I couldn't even tell you. Who,
good little finish.
I couldn't even.
Could you tell me
the goal?
Yeah.
I literally forgot.
It was actually a great team goal. It was actually a very kind
of. Finish
it
off?
It was a pretty sexy goal. It was Rafa Leão.
It was Leão. Okay.
It was Leão. Okay. Great goal.
Why'd you skip that point there at the top there?
Because we hit that point at the top of the episode.
Yeah. Wait, what was the point?
One thing about that point specifically, about the Libertadores champions, and I hate to bring it to that, but man, I'm so happy because I now get my Liga back on Fubo.
What?
That's what they were playing instead of the Liga.
That's crazy.
That's why you're on tape delay?
Because it's on beIN Sports.
Oh my God,
so
that's
now,
so farmers.
Like, I was trying to tune into the end of Marseille Toulouse,
oh
right?
God.
But I couldn't because the Libertadores game was playing. So now that this Libertadores competition is over, great competition, by the way, historic, whatever, I get my Liga back. I don't know why you're laughing.
We're playing fucking
racing.
Libertadores over Liga, bro. It's so over, bro.
Why couldn't they play both?
Because it's on beIN Sports.
Oh, because it's on a...
So they can't... They only have a certain amount of channels?
I think they only have two channels.
That is crazy. That is crazy.
So it wasn't on tape delay, like the other games?
Oh, no, it just wasn't there.
You know what this meme is? The speed meme? That's what I'm thinking right now.
Oh, wow.
Can I say something about the Napoli game?
Mm. Oh, please. Oh, you're going to tell me the same
shit. If the defending champions are supposed to come out with a front three of Hoyland, David Neres, and Noah Lang, and I'm supposed to be scared?
Very good front three.
Good for who? Good for who? My 2021 career mode? Like, what are we talking about, guys? What are we actually talking about? Genuinely, I'm almost positive I have Hoyland and David Neres in my 2020, like, one of my Napoli career modes. I swear to God.
Isn't that the whole point of a career mode? So that they grow into players.
They aren't stars,
bro. What was their potential?
Very high.
Very high. And now, what are they doing?
I mean,
they're winning Scudettos.
I guess, bro. I don't know. It just goes back to my point. Like, Neres has scored a good goal.
Cheeky little title race going on in Serie A.
Yeah, it's nice. It's always nice. Every year it's nice.
Yeah, every year it's nice.
It is.
Yeah, that's fair.
You're such a hater, bro. You're such a hater.
Is it FPL
I'm kind of mad you didn't bite on my Man United stuff.
I don't really.
Is it FPL roundup time?
Yeah, it's FPL roundup time.
Can I do it?
Let me put this on the table.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let me do it.
Go on, please. And I get creative with this man. Okay.
I'll try. So Puffinon Zubi actually ended the week in last. Terrible performance from him. In hindsight, looking at the weeks that everyone else had, not including the three here sitting next to me, the average was 35. He got 34. He had a good wild card week last week. We're going to bounce back. He's not worried. His defense did absolutely nothing, but Konza was his choice to bring in, which I think he deserves credit for bringing him off the bench. And then Saka did got an assist, and Mateta did get a goal. And other than that, a whole lot of nothing. No free hit. And of course, the manager of Puffinon Zubi being how smart he is and not following trends and trying to be creative, unlike the other three managers beside me.
So are you calling the other
managers? So you're not creative, mate. You're wrong.
Yeah.
I'm wrong. I was mad. I'm gonna be honest. I'm mad. But again, you guys are all having crazy seasons. I'm 700K in the world. That's not terrible.
Yeah. No, we are all the best at FPL that we have ever
been. So like we're all having crazy seasons. So not a good week for Puffinon Zubi. You know what? We move. Next up, we have Dam Danza with 46 off his free hit, which he says is a bad.
That hurts the eyes.
Which he says is bad. Low key, I don't think it's that bad. You're 11 points above the average.
I mean, let me tell you what the manager was going to do.
No, okay. On free hit, 11 points over average. That's just unacceptable in my opinion.
So a couple of key decisions that the manager was really considering and really flip flopping. I'm talking multiple transfers throughout the week, just flip flopping between two. It was between Kevin Shada and Dangle Ouattara.
That Virgil van Dijk.
That's a crazy free hit. Actually, I'm gonna be honest. That's a crazy pull from you.
Why? What?
Virgil van Dijk?
Well, he was on the bench originally for Salah, but Salah didn't end up playing, so Van Dijk came on, and they were playing West Ham. So I was like, okay.
Did he get a clean sheet or no?
Well, it was also between having a triple up of Liverpool and having Gakpo on my team as well. And in hindsight, should have had that as well. Anyways, win for Kevin Shida over...
Morgan gives what?
Okay, wait, maybe...
Win for Dango...
How did he get more points than me this week? Fuck me.
Win for Dango Ouattara. Or didn't go for Dango Ouattara. Win for Kevin Shida instead. Dango Ouattara produces. Win for Jeremy Doku.
Is that Jeremy Doku?
Win for Jeremy Doku instead of Phil Foden. I had Phil Foden originally. Sold him for Doku because I was like, oh, Doku's done way more in the Prem this season for City.
Is that
Cuevas?
Is that Munoz?
No, Munoz is good. Munoz is good.
I don't know. 1 point's not very good to me.
Cash didn't get as much as Konsa. Rodgers didn't fucking deliver. Haaland captain, obviously. That fucked over everybody this week. Overall, it was right teams to target. It was wrong players to target.
Is it?
And that's what went wrong for the damn Danso manager.
Wrong players.
I'm talking about, is it?
That's great.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
What's up, Blakey?
Yeah. Next up, we have Teta Penitentiary FC, who had a crazy week. Really frustrated with that. Going to be really honest. He's now up to second, tied on points.
Yeah.
With
how many points? Dam Danza. How many points?
767.
All right. Nice. Move on.
Anyway, Miles, you want to talk through your team? You want me to do it?
Who's Miles?
Sorry. Teta Penitentiary.
The manager would like to hold a press conference.
You know what?
Very pleased.
you know, felt like it was a free hit this weekend. A lot of big games, so a lot, not many kind of opportunities for some teams to get points in big games. I don't really like to bank on that. But yeah, pretty happy. Starting from the back, we'll go with the little rat, Emmy Martinez, 7 points.
He actually had a great game.
This is my thing, though. I have standards. I would never bring an Emmy Martinez into my
And that's why Blake plays with emotion, and that is why you are last.
And you know what? I'm fine.
And
with
that is why you captain Gyökeres.
And I'm fine with that. And he's got a goal, bro. Fuck off.
7 points. Maddie Cash as well, joined alongside him in the back line with 6. Nico Williams. I thought the Force were going to play a lot better than they did.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed, but that's okay. O'Reilly, obviously, his friend Nunez off to the right.
Absolutely sold.
Absolutely sold. For him. It's not his fault. He's okay. Sade, I feel like,
Sade.
I like Sade, though.
Sade's a great artist.
Great artist. And a great...
What's his name? Shade?
No, Sade's a girl.
What's his first name?
No,
but how do you say this?
Sade.
Daniel.
Sade. Nope. Yeah. What do you say? Sade? Same thing.
What's his first name?
Daniel.
Oh.
So...
That's not his first name.
I know it's not his first name.
I like the confidence, though.
Phil Foden... Morgan Rogers, Salah sat.
That's very poor, I will say, to not have a bench, to have just 4.5
million. What are you fucking talking about? It's a free hit. Yep. It's one fucking week.
Yeah, but you have to anticipate.
Exactly. No, I do not. I don't have to anticipate shit.
Do you not have, like, any team value? Is that why, like, I'm not seeing any budget in this team whatsoever. Anyways,
scroll down and check it.
Please, move on, move on.
Oh, I have no clue. Yeah. And then Haaland at the top, Mateta. Wait, I had Mateta? Oh, shit. I thought I took him out. And
Which template did you follow with this team, Miles?
Which template?
I think I went on FPL Raptors, this exact team.
I'm going to say it looks very template.
I don't know. That's all I'm going to say. I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, moved up to second in the 6YB league. Wow, I'm now actually up to third in the Kiddish Cup, if anyone was wondering.
All right.
I'm 3,800th in the Thogdon's Super.
Good for you, man. All right. God.
Yeah. 300K okay, overall is unheard of for Miles.
It's pretty good.
Having a good year.
And up top, as always, re-cementing his very firm lead at the top. I forgot the name of Ping Pong, but it's Frim Ping Pong.
Yeah.
What a week.
Jesus what? Christ, wait, how did you get that?
I had Cody Gakpo. Hooked. Phil Foden.
Oh my goodness. Igor Thiago. What a team. Wow.
Emi Martinez.
Wow.
We're just feeling good over here.
No, but oh. Because Salah didn't play.
And if you look on the left side of the screen if you look on the left side of the screen there, the average position's 8,000 in the world. That's really what I like. 21st in France.
Oh my God.
That's really what I like to see.
He's 21st in the whole of France.
Yeah,
that's crazy,
bro. Oh my God.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and that'll do it.
That'll do
it. Wow. Well, wow. Hats off to you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Jesus Christ.
Incoming big week for me. Just get ready.
And that'll do it for the FPL Roundup. And once again, that will do it for another episode of the 6 Euro Box Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you're listening on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, do all the YouTube things. Hype us up if you don't mind. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, give us a little 5-star rating and let us know, is Xabi Alonso to blame for Real Madrid's problems or the players to blame for Real Madrid's problems? With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, this has been myself, Miles Blake, and European champion Antoine Wheels. See you all very soon.
We out.
Yep.